Views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Vladimir Putin is extending his tenure as Russia's longest-serving leader despite quiet yet widespread protest. Details from VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
At polling stations across the country, civil disobedience overlapped with civic duty. Vandals, tainted ballots, pouring ink in ballot boxes attempting to render votes illegible. With arson burning another polling station in the Sverdlovsk region. While in St. Petersburg, a woman hurled a Molotov cocktail at a polling station before authorities captured her as she tried to escape. The 2024 Russian presidential election marks the second in which residents of Ukraine's illegally annexed territory of Crimea cast their ballots. Ukrainian officials call it a sham. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Russian President Vladimir Putin said he supported an idea to release the late opposition leader Alexei Navalny in a prisoner exchange just days before the man who was his biggest foe died. VOA's Joe Ramsey reports.
In his first comments to address Navalny's death, Putin said of the dissident's demise, quote, "It happens. There is nothing you can do about it. It's life." Putin said Monday, also without offering any evidence, that several days before Navalny's death, certain colleagues told him about, quote, "an idea to exchange Navalny for certain people held in penitentiary facilities in Western countries." He said he supported the idea. A Navalny aide last month accused Putin of getting rid of Navalny in order to not exchange him, but offered no evidence to back her claims. Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
The U.S. is scrambling to assess the future of its counterterrorism operation in the Sahel region of Africa after the ruling junta in Niger announced it was ending military cooperation with Washington. U.S. military has hundreds of troops stationed at a major air base in the country. It's used to deploy flights over the vast Sahel region. This is VOA News. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Sunday hit back at a speech made last week by the U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Netanyahu said Schumer's comments calling for new elections in Israel were totally inappropriate. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reporting.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday pushed back fiercely against what he described as international pressure over the war in Gaza. At a cabinet meeting, he said, "To our friends in the international community, I say, is your memory so short, so quickly you forgot about October 7th, the worst massacre committed against Jews since the Holocaust?" And he repeated his determination to send forces into Rafah, the city on the border with Egypt, overrun by civilian refugees who fled their shattered homes elsewhere in the Gaza Strip.
That is Reuters' Zachary Goldman reporting. European Union has announced a $7.4 billion euro or $8 billion aid package for cash-strapped Egypt as concerns mount that the economic pressure and conflicts in neighboring countries can drive more migrants to Europe's shores or European shores. Egyptian officials said the deal was signed during a visit Sunday by the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. The leaders of Belgium, Italy, Austria, Cyprus, and Greece were also present. North Korea fired multiple short-range ballistic missiles toward its eastern waters days after the end of the South Korean U.S. military drills at the North views as an invasion rehearsal. The launches were to the North's first known missile testing activities in about a month. Japan, South Korea, and the U.S. condemned the launches as threats to regional peace. Guatemala says offices of its honorary consul in Haiti have been ransacked. AP correspondent Lawrence Brooks.
As Haiti once again spirals into chaos with another wave of gang violence, a number of government and aid agencies have reported that their facilities and aid supplies have been looted. Gangs have raged through Haiti in recent weeks, attacking key institutions and shutting down the main international airport. The chaos has pushed many Haitians to the brink of famine and left many more in increasingly desperate conditions. On Saturday, UNICEF said one of its containers holding essential items for maternal, neonatal and child survival, including resuscitators, were looted in the capital's main port, which was breached by gangs last week. I'm Lawrence Brooks.
And a charter flight carrying dozens of U.S. citizens fleeing spiraling gang violence in Haiti landed in Miami. The U.S. State Department official said more than 30 U.S. citizens were on the government chartered flight on Sunday. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Monday, March 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian President Bola Tinubu wants justice for those responsible for the killing of 16 soldiers in Delta State.
The armed forces are a symbol of our national collective existence, and it is impossible for any government to fold its arm to be allowed to perpetrate such kind of violence in our land. So the President has issued a stern warning to all those who will want to do this in the future, and he has also directed the armed forces to fish out these criminals.
Liberians complain of poor mobile phone services. Peace talks between the South Sudan government and armed groups might resume in 2 to 3 weeks in Kenya. Renewed fighting flares up again over the weekend between the DRC military and M23 rebels.
Since 2 days, fighting has been reported in the city of Sake. During this fighting, rockets from M23 landed in a MONUSCO camp near Sake and wounded some peacekeepers.
And U.S. legislators react to a series of controversial remarks by Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's polls are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Bola Tinubu has directed the chief of staff of the army to identify and punish those responsible for the deadly attack that killed 16 soldiers in Delta State. The soldiers had been on a peace mission in the area when they were attacked by militant youths. Meanwhile, a video circulating on social media is purported to show the Nigerian army burning down a village where the killings supposedly took place. Information Minister Mohammed Idris Maligai tells me that President Tinubu has described the attack as unprovoked.
The president has issued a statement. Of course, you know that the armed forces have released their own statement yesterday condemning the attack and promising that all those who are perpetrating this violence will be brought to justice. Now, the president in his own statement today has also reiterated that under no circumstance will anybody take laws into the hands to attack our armed forces. The armed forces are a symbol of our national collective existence, and it is impossible for any government to fold its arm to be allowed to perpetrate such kind of violence in our land. So the president's statement has issued a stern warning to all those who will want to do this in the future, and he has also directed the armed forces to fish out these criminals and, you know, prosecute them.
So, Minister, how come this happened on the military? How come this attack happened?
Well, it's difficult for you to ask me how come it has happened, you know, because these are, of course, you know that the military was on a peacekeeping operation in the Delta area. And so these people now took laws into their hands and attacked them. And in the process, a commanding officer was killed, another senior officer was killed, and about 12 soldiers also lost their lives. Of course, in the operation field, it is difficult for me to say how it did happen. But whatever has happened, it is a condemnable act. The armed forces will not tolerate that. The Nigerian army issued a statement, like I said yesterday. The president also reiterated that this evening in the statement he has personally also signed. Now, the fact that the president as commander-in-chief has signed that statement also goes to underscore the importance with which the president has attached to this act that has happened.
So, Minister, I've seen a video on social media suggesting that the military, in a retaliatory mode, set fire to the town in which the attack happened. Is this video, have you seen it, and is it authentic?
Well, all kinds of videos have been circulating. I cannot confirm or deny any video or audio at this point. What I can say is that the Nigerian Armed Forces have been charged with the responsibility of ensuring that those who perpetrated this crime have been brought to justice. Now, whether it is as a result of that you saw that video, I cannot confirm or deny that at this point.
Before I let you go, Minister, I want to ask you about the abducted school children. Do you have any update?
Well, the update is that the Nigerian Armed Forces have been asked to ensure that these children are being brought back to their families, to reunite them with their families. And in the process, you also know that I issued also a statement on behalf of the president to indicate that the president said he is not going to accept any form of ransom payment to get these people back to reunite with their family. This is the official position of government. This is a directive that the president has also given. I know that Nigerian Armed Forces and other security agencies are working around the clock to ensure that these children, all the kidnappers that have been taken captive by these criminal elements, are being brought back to reunite them with their families.
Mohammed Idris Malaga is Nigeria's Minister of Information. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. Liberians have been complaining about the poor services being provided by the country's major communication companies, resulting in economic constraints for some businesses prior to last week's outages in the sub-region. Dennis Nipson reports from Monrovia.
Liberians across the country are concerned about its two major global mobs. They say they are providing poor services, which some businesses claim are creating low revenue generation. Among the complaints are slow network connectivity and lack of coverage in some areas. Gibson Sanner is a vendor who sells recharge cards from both companies. He says the situation is affecting his business and I join complaints from his customers.
Sometimes the customer will kind of have arguments, someone else will leave. They will tell me, I know that there's a situation that's going on and I've seen in their money. I said, no, I don't know. So sometimes it gave me hard time in having my business. So my customer will get in confusion.
Another citizen, Augustus Yapa, says he missed out on the contract due to field calls and poor connectivity.
Orange, when you put your Tuesday money there, the Tuesday will not finish and will take your money. I experienced it twice. With our Lunsa, whenever you subscribe Lunsa, to even dark a number to call somebody, it will stay long for you can hear anybody calling. So now when you call, my phone is on, somebody calls, you say the phone is off. So it really affecting us in this place here. It caused problem for me. It made me to miss call plenty of time. That's not business and you can't attend it. It made me to lose some money on it the other time.
Miata Davis, a fashion designer who deals mainly online, says she is losing customers regularly.
And in that way, I've been so very bad. We don't really get you with call. If you call your friend, they would tell you, say, never busy. I'm a fashion designer, and my customers, because of the network, anytime they call me, I don't receive their call. So I've been losing a lot of customers.
The GSM companies did not respond to our repeated requests for comment. Meanwhile, following the complaints, the Liberia House of Representatives invited both companies to appear before the Oversight Committee. Representative Ava Jones is the head of the House Committee on Post and Telecommunication. He says Lone Star Cell, MTN, GSM, and Orange Liberia have been instructed to restore services.
In the committee recommendation as it relates to the complaint brought before it, we recommended to the plenary of the House of Representatives that there be restitution done, especially to areas that were affected in terms of the poor quality of the service that led to the expiration of data packages, minis, or whatever form that the customer have faced as a result of the network.
Even though there was a recent outage across West Africa due to damaged overseas cables, Liberians are hoping for better services, especially those who rely on the networks for business. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Dennis Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
There was renewed fighting over the weekend between the Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC military, and M23 rebels operating in the east of the country. The French news agency AFP reports that at least 8 UN peacekeepers were wounded during an M23 attack on the town of Sake, about 12 miles west of the eastern city of Goma. Reporter Al Katanti Sabiti Jaffa in Goma spoke with me earlier about the latest resumption of hostilities.
Since 2 days, fighting has been reported in the city of Sake after a week without any fighting. And this is because M23 tried to take the control of the downtown Sake, and FRDC had to stop them to take the control of the entire city of Sake. During this fighting, rockets from M23 landed in a MONUSCO camp near Sake and wounded some peacekeepers.
M23 rebels say they were responding to an attack by the Wazalendo militia. Who are the Wazalendo militia? What are they about?
Every time when M23 attack an area, they say they are attacking Wazalendo. They are responding on some Wazalendo attacks. And Wazalendo are civilian people who decided to fight alongside FARDC to protect their land against the common enemy, which is M23. And sometimes M23 just accused sometimes locals, civilians without weapon, to be Wazalendo. And when M23 qualifies someone as a Wazalendo, that means he became their enemy and they can shoot on him. So when they accuse citizen as Wazalendo, that means they can open fire on them because they become automatically their enemy. Wazalendo, some of them are farmer, my groups, fighters, and some of them are just civilian who decided to take weapon to help the Congolese army to fight against M23. And they are an active actor in this fighting because since more than 1 year, these Wazalendo are protecting their zone, fighting against enemy. And in some places, they are the one who made a big resistance against M23, even more than FARDC.
As we speak at this moment, how would you describe the situation? Is it calm or is it still continuing?
Fighting still ongoing. Anyone who can be seen in Sake is shot by M23 snipers. You know, M23 are controlling hills around Sake and FARDC are in the city of Sake. So even civilian, anyone who can be in Sake, he will be targeted by M23. And M23 will say they are killing Wazalendo. So everybody in Sake is qualified by M23 as a Wazalendo or FARDC. Even this Sunday, some people were injured and killed in Sake by shots coming from the hill controlled by M23.
That was reporter Jaffa Akatanti speaking with us from Goma in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. To Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, March 18th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The head of the South Sudan government delegation to peace talks with holdout armed groups says he expects talks to resume in 2 to 3 weeks with the facilitation of the Kenyan government. The holdouts have yet to ratify the 2018 revitalized comprehensive peace agreement. The talks had been taking place in Rome in recent years. The new development comes as some of the groups are demanding that the talks return to Rome for all the parties to decide whether they can trust President Salva Kiir. Abino Matom Ayul is the head of the South Sudan delegation. He tells me the holdouts cannot detect where the talks should take place.
We are currently engaging with the government of Kenya, who are the sole mediator in regard to the peace initiative of South Sudan. We are currently in free consultations.
How true are these reports that some of the so-called holdouts are demanding that the talks be returned to Rome because it seems they don't trust President Salva Kiir?
What is the connection between the opposition not to trust Salva Kiir? That's why they are called opposition, because when you are an opposition, you don't trust your opponent.
I guess what I'm asking, did they say that they would like for the talks to return to Rome instead of Kenya?
If you are in opposition, you don't give a condition where the mediation should hold place or should take place. So you can take a time and ask them why are they insisting they have to be in A and B.
Do you have any idea when the talks will likely begin?
We are waiting for the government of Kenya to send an official invitation letter, and we should be in Kenya as soon as possible.
These talks have been going on. I know I did talk with someone like Thomas Cirillo. Now I understand that he himself is being very skeptical because he thinks that President Salva Kiir, instead of focusing on the talks, is trying to get his members or some members of the group to defect. What do you know?
I am not aware about that. If there is something going on behind the scene, I don't know. And if President Salva is doing so, then I'm not aware about it.
So once again, you said that Kenya has accepted to facilitate the talks. Is that correct?
Yes.
And is it likely the talks might start this week, this month?
In about a couple of weeks from now, maybe 2 weeks, three, or less than 2 weeks. The delegation of South Sudan should be in Nairobi as soon as possible.
Are these talks conditioned on the election that's supposed to be taking place in South Sudan, or is it the view of the government that these talks should take place before the election?
These have nothing to do with the election. There has been an ongoing peace initiative which was in Nairobi in 2018, and it was transferred to Rome. And now the government have requested to be returned back to Kenya. So it has nothing to do with any elections.
Well, I do appreciate very much, for speaking with you. And please let me know when the talks are beginning.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Abino Matam Ayul is the head of the South Sudan delegation to peace talks with holdout armed groups. He was speaking with us from Nairobi, Kenya. U.S. legislators reacted to a series of controversial remarks made by Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump on Saturday. And while Democratic President Joe Biden was not on the campaign trail over the weekend, his re-election bid also made headlines. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias explains.
Former Republican President Donald Trump made headlines for several remarks he made while campaigning on Saturday in Dayton, Ohio. One of them came as he was criticizing China's building of car manufacturing plants in Mexico.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole... That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
Trump's campaign underscored that the comment wasn't about political violence. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy shared his opinion on the matter during an appearance on NBC's Meet the Press.
The general tone of the speech is why many Americans continue to wonder, should President Trump be president? Depending upon the perspective, somebody is going to interpret it. He's running against Biden, so Biden's going to say it's about political violence. His defenders want to defend him, and so they're going to say it's about economic disaster.
Ohio Republican Representative Mike Turner, who appeared on ABC's this week, shared his views about Trump's comments, referring to some migrants as not people, and Biden's handling of illegal crossings at the border.
Well, I, of course, have disagreed with those in the past. I think the American public disagree with those. But I do think that people see that Donald Trump is the only candidate in this race that's going to be able to fix this crisis.
During Saturday's campaign event, Trump also doubled down on criticism of Democratic President Joe Biden's economic policies, and didn't leave out the sense of urgency when calling on Trump supporters to participate in the general election.
I don't think you're going to have another election in this country. If we don't win this election, I don't think you're going to have another election, or certainly not an election that's meaningful. And we better get out, or we better. I actually say that the date, remember this, November 5th, I believe it's going to be the most important date in the history of our country.
President Biden's re-election bid also drew media attention over the weekend with news that his campaign reached a fundraising milestone. It now has $155 million in cash on hand. Of that, $53 million was raised in February alone. The news broke as Biden prepared to host a brunch for several Roman Catholic leaders Sunday at the White House to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa's Post, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with athletics. Ethiopia's Jimal Yima won the Seoul Marathon on Sunday after finishing the race in 2 hours, 6 minutes and 9 seconds, while Fikret Wireta claimed a clear women's race win to secure an Ethiopian double at the Seoul Marathon. It was the first World Athletics Platinum Labour Road race win for both athletes. Wireta ran a lifetime best of 2 hours, 21 minutes, 32 seconds. The Seoul Marathon, one of the world's top 10 marathons, is a recipient of the World Athletics Heritage Plaque, along with the Boston and Athens marathons. And now to basketball. FUS Rabat on Sunday beat Cape Town Tigers 84-75 in Pretoria to become the first winners of the 2024 Basketball Africa League Kalahari Conference. The Moroccan reigning champions closed their conference campaign with a 3-1 record. Samkelo Sile and Billy Priestin led host Cape Town Tigers with 24 and 23 points respectively, but the night belonged to the visitors FUS Rabat, who bounced back from a 3-point loss to Petro de Luanda 3 days earlier. Both FUS Rabat and Petro de Luanda qualified automatically to the BAL playoffs, while Cape Town Tigers will wait for the end of the other two conferences to find out if they are ensured a postseason spot. And now to the African Games, where Kenya men's volleyball team Wafame Stars on Sunday dismissed Gambia 3-0 to complete their Pool A matches unbeaten and book winless Burkina Faso in the quarterfinals in Accra. The last 8 matches will be played on Wednesday at the Methodist University of Ghana Multipurpose Hall in Accra. Meanwhile, Kenya's women's team, the Malkia Strikers, will be hoping to extend their unbeaten run when they play the Democratic Republic of Congo on Monday in their third Pool B match. In weightlifting, the Nigerian weightlifting contingent to the Africa Games have left Ghana ahead of the African Championships and Olympic qualifiers in Alexandria, Egypt. The tournament have wrestlers from under 17, under 20 and seniors in action, with a senior competition scheduled for March 18th to the 20th, while the Olympic qualifiers commences 2 days after the championship from March 22nd to the 24th. The Olympic wrestling team, which consists of 6 female and 5 male wrestlers that dominated the African Games, will hope to secure a place in this year's Olympics in Paris. In cycling news, the 20th edition of the Cape Epic Mountain Bike Stage got underway on Sunday. The 8-day epic will cover 613 kilometers with over 16,000 meters of vertical climbing. As has become tradition, the Cape Epic started with a team time trial prologue, a chance for amateurs to test their legs and an opportunity for the elite teams to gauge their opponents. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa's Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, March 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.
The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Greetings. This is VOA's Sunny Young. Brighten your day by tuning in the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. You can also follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and VOAAfrica.com. It's the Sunny Side of Sports, right here on The Voice of America.
A group of 12 women are recipients of this year's International Women of Courage Award. Three of them are from Africa. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we will introduce you to women who have demonstrated remarkable courage and determination in advocating for the rights of fellow women. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 19.